This episode of Hookup Horror Stories is brought to you by Foria Wellness. At Foria Wellness, pleasure is your nature. Foria Wellness is passionate about innovation in the sexual wellness realm. They offer tons of products made from plant-based ingredients specifically designed to enhance your sexual pleasure. From increased arousal and pleasure to aiding sexual and menstrual comfort, Foria's large selection of wellness products solve real challenges and deliver meaningful results. They are also innovative leaders, having invented the first ever cannabis and hemp-based personal lubricants and CBD suppositories, which help address menstrual and pelvic discomfort. I absolutely love the CBD booty melts to help aid in comfort during spicy times with my partner. They also help with keeping things nice and lubricated. Try Foria Wellness products and get 20% off your entire order using code DEMITRI at checkout. That's code DEMITRI, D-E-M-I-T-R-I, for 20% off your entire order. Thank you, Foria Wellness, for sponsoring this week's episode. Welcome to Hookup Horror Stories. This podcast may not be suitable for listeners under the age of 18 and may contain themes of sexuality, sexual assault, domestic violence, or other mental health issues. A content warning is in place. Viewer discretion is advised.
Yeah, and I told him, look, I will pay for rehab. If you go to rehab for as long as you have to go, I'll get 2-3 jobs, I'll pay for it. She laughed at me, literally laughed at me. And I said, what are you laughing for? She says, well, because you don't have to do that. I'm not going to go. I said, why wouldn't you want to go? That'd be something for you. That's an opportunity. Now I'm paying for it. She says, no. She just didn't want to go. She didn't want to change her life or whatever. So I told her, we have to break up. I can't deal with this. No, I can't see people that are doing drugs. So she acted like she understood. But then she said, well, you know what I'm going to do if you don't change your mind? I'm going to bruise my leg, keep hitting my leg till it bruises up. I'm going to call the cops and say you did it. But the slide in that pussy is the homicide.
Welcome to Hookup Horror Stories, the podcast where we spill the tea on sex and dating. I'm Demi Wilde, your resident sexual deviant, and today I've got a very extra special guest deviant. I have creator and author of the new book, Twisted Love, Robert Bijouet. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
How you doing today?
Good. How are you feeling today?
I am doing wonderfully. Well, Robert, thank you for being here on the show. Can you tell my listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York, and I was raised, my teen years, I was raised in Oklahoma, and I came back to New York right before I joined the military. I was in the military from 91 to 99, and I was in and out of New York, and I finally stayed in New York throughout the 90s. Been in New York ever since.
How do you like New York?
It's great. It's my first home. This is where I'm from originally. Oklahoma is my second home. Always will be my second home. Oklahoma was definitely an experience as far as where I'm living.
Definitely. as compared to Oklahoma to New York, like what kind of differences or like what kind of like interesting in between those two places have you experienced?
Well, Oklahoma, as you know, it's more rural. It's more country out there. I lived in small towns. I never lived out like in the boondocks, but I lived in small towns. There's a certain respect for the element that's out there. And at the same time, in New York City, it's an urban city environment, as you know. It's pretty much a learning experience when you're growing up from a kid to your teens up into a young adult. You kind of learn what it is to live on both sides of the fence.
Definitely, yeah. When did you start writing?
I started actually as a songwriter first. I started writing songs back in 19 originally. I was 15 years old at the time. I was originally a songwriter. And then in the late 80s, I was considering writing books. But I didn't know what was all involved with that and what you had to do to actually write a book, what was involved with that. And I decided that if I could write a song, I could write a book. You know, they're basically similar.
Just a little bit longer, huh?
A A little bit longer, yeah. But with the books I've written, this is the first one that's published. Like my songs, there's always a message behind everything I write. So with Twisted Love, it's basically a triangle with love and obsession with three people involved. And it's basically saying no means no. It doesn't mean someone says no and you still pursue the person, you know?
Yeah. What kind of style would you say your writing is?
Unlimited detail. Unlimited detail because I want the reader to visually read what I visually wrote. Like, for example, if I'm writing a novel, I'll visualize while I'm writing. And then when the book comes out, whenever the book will come out, whoever reads my book, they could visualize what they're reading because of the unlimited detail in the way I wrote the book.
Yeah. I mean, detail is obviously important with whatever you write. You said something about no means no just a minute ago. What does that kind of mean for you? And what parts of the book talk about no means no?
Well, it's like the part of the book, like the guy that's stalking the girl, Tommy, he's stalking Crystal. They had a date right in the middle of the date. They were going to go to a movie after they had dinner. And she kind of tells him, look, I don't want to mislead you. But I'm not really interested. You know, some people know right away. Some people don't know right away. She just knew right away that he wasn't really for her. But she was trying to tell him in a nice way. And he took it fine in the beginning. But it's like he couldn't accept the fact that she said no. He actually felt like that she was interested. They had dinner. Now they were going to a movie. But she stopped him and said, look, you know, I'm not interested. She was just being upfront and right. And he kind of took it fine while they were together that first night. But he decided that he wanted to still pursue her in spite of her saying no, thinking that she will eventually change her mind.
How did that... Was this inspired by any like real life scenarios to you? Like, did you actually have this happen to you or?
Actually, I was a victim of obsession. I was dating this woman for several months, 6-7 months. And I just found out that she was doing drugs. I don't particularly live by a lot of rules, but that's just one rule I do live by. I don't date women who do drugs. We broke up. She didn't take it good. And then she started stalking me at a distance. Everywhere I went, there she was. She was, I'm trying to explain to her that I was no longer interested in pursuing a relationship with her, but she didn't take that good. And she pursued me and left threatening messages on my answer machine. Remember the answer machine?
I do, yeah.
Yeah. And this was back in the early 90s. And we just basically, I had an order of protection against her because she threatened me. She threatened my life that if I didn't go back with her, she would kill me. And I had to get two different order of protections because the first one, she violated it when she followed me to my job. She went to jail for about a week. And then I put another order of protection for a year. Instead of 6 months, it was a year now. And she violated it again. So she went to jail for another week. And finally, I moved. She just lived up the street from me. So when I moved, she thought I went back to Oklahoma, but I really went back to the other. I went to another side of Brooklyn.
Crazy. What's an order of protection for those that might not know?
Order of protection is when you are being threatened or stalked by someone and you don't want that person anywhere near you. You would go to the police station and let them know, put file complaint against that person. And then they would get an order of protection fixed up for you. You get a copy of the order of protection. They keep the original because it's for their own files. The order of protection keeps that person away from you. They come anywhere near you, they go to jail. And you can increase your order of protection because of that person violating the first one. It works. It really does work. You got to show the police, though, that you're serious. And if they see that you're not serious and it's a back and forth thing, then they see that you're not serious. They're not going to take it serious themselves. So you got to show from the very beginning that you're dead serious. It's a scary thing to have someone stalk you and you're being watched and you're constantly looking over your shoulder.
Yeah, I can imagine. So it's kind of like a restraining order. What kind of, what was the process of getting one of those? Like, did you have to go down to the city hall? Do you have to like ask for it? Like what kind of paperwork is there?
No, you just go to the nearest precinct where you live and you're basically showing the police station, the police department, this person has been threatening my life because we broke up recently. He won't leave me alone, or she won't leave me alone. They keep coming around me. They keep threatening me. They keep stalking me. And that's enough for a protection right there, or a protection.
That's simple, then. That seems pretty easy to do.
It is. It really is. Like I said, you just got to take it serious, because the police department will see if you are serious or not.
What kind of evidence do you have to, like, you, I mean, you have to, like, take it seriously. So, like, what, you have to, like, give them evidence or something, like text messages?
Yeah, if you have text messages that show that he's just constantly bothering you, threatening you, if he's, you know, threatening that you don't go back with him or back with her, anything you could show, texts or voicemails, anything of that, that's like points as far as getting your protection.
Good to know.
Yeah, I mean, you could voice your situation, but it's always a plus to have those pieces of evidence.
Sure, yeah, because it leaves a trail, people, for them to gradually, like, actually grasp in their hand, like, here's the story.
Absolutely.
When did you decide to take this experience of yours and turn it into a book?
Well, like I said, she lived up the street from me, just on the corner. I lived just down the street from her. We're practically on the same block. We had the same circle of friends, and I told them I was moving back to Oklahoma, but I really wasn't. I was just moving to the other side of Brooklyn. And the word got around that she thought I was moving back to Oklahoma. So I was moving out. There she was, right in front of my building, watching me load my stuff in the car, you know, the cab. And I looked at her and just kind of, you know, I went right back into the cab, you know, and the cab driver left. It was a narrow street, like a one-way narrow street. And she stood right in the middle of the street, looking at me. I was looking through the windshield, the back window of the car. It sent a chill up my spine, the way she looked at me. So when we turned the highway to go to the other side of Brooklyn, I thought this would be a great novel, but I'm not going to do a story on us. I'm going to do a fictional story based on inspiration from what I went through. So I was thinking, there's got to be a million stories with two people, one chasing the other person. So I thought about adding another person, a third person. The guy in the middle is stalking the girl he's obsessed with. At the same time, while denying he's not obsessed, he's telling the other girl, look, you're obsessed, because the other girl's stalking him at the same time. It's got a little dark humor to it.
Yeah, I can totally see that. It's a little bit like, Closer. Have you seen the film Closer?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Or the play Closer, even. Maybe a little bit like You, too, the Netflix show.
Right, right.
Like, how does this, I guess I want to ask before I ask that question is, how much of yourself did you have to, or like, how much did, of yourself they have to put in the other person's shoes in order to get to that place to write from this perspective?
Well, that was the whole thing right there. Before I wrote the novel, I didn't write the novel right away. I knew I had to do at least a couple years, or at least a year, research on the obsessed person. I know what it was to be the victim. I went through that. Now I got to see what's in the mind of the obsessed person. So there's a newspaper. It's not around no more. I don't think it's around anymore. Called the Village Voice.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they were around a long time. Well, I put an ad in the paper for three women and two guys who have obsession issues regarding to love. And that was an experience. I mean, the research I went through with those five people, they were great people. They just had issues with getting over their relationships they were involved with. I found it a very big thing with women and men, very different ways of going about through obsession. Women are very emotional compared to men. Though there are men out there that are just as emotional as women, but the men I was interviewing with the three women, separately, of course, they had all different demeanors as far as being obsessed and stalking. Like one of the women, it was 20 years ago at that time that they got divorced. And it's like 15 years that the other guy was married to the other woman and had kids.
Oh, man.
She thought, as I was interviewing her, she thought he was going to come back to her anytime now. So I'm like,
he was still in it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a tunnel vision of one person. And, you know, I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not in medicine or anything like that, or a therapist or whatever. That's a mental issue. It's a big mental issue when you have just one person that you're focused on. And there's a whole million a bunch of millions and millions of people out there you could choose from to be with. That was an experience. The research was a definite experience, but it was positive because now I knew what was inside of the obsessed person's mind, and I was able to convey it on my book.
That's great. So you kind of like crowdsourced your stalkers.
Yeah. I mean, it was an interesting thing. I mean, I didn't think anybody would answer the ad in the first place, but five people, the three women and two men I was looking for. And I took them all out to dinner the last time we were together, and I thanked them for their input on the situation. And I couldn't record the interviews because their therapist or psychiatrist that they were seeing at the time I was interviewing them, they didn't want any of that. So I was like, I understood. So I respected their wishes, you know.
Oh, you were in the room with the psychiatrist as well when they were?
No, I would talk to the psychiatrist before interviewing that person first.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then I asked them, how would they feel if I recorded them, just my own continued research. And he said, the psychiatrist that were with those five people, each of them said no. So I said, okay, I can respect that. I'll just write things down on paper, you know?
Oh, yeah, take notes, yeah.
Yeah, I just took notes, you know, just writing things out. And that was it. I had a good time doing it because I was accomplishing what I was trying to do before I do the book. And I had a lot of notes to deal with. And it gave me a lot of input, a lot of insight on the situation. More than I ever thought existed. I didn't think it was that much. I knew there was a lot there, but I didn't know it was going to be as much as it was.
Yeah. How extreme did these people that you were interviewing take their obsession, and how extreme, or as compared to how extreme in your characters in your book?
I think two out of the five were really extreme. Like the one that was thinking he's going to come back any moment now. The characters in my book are pretty much extreme as well. The two that were obsessed in the book, they're extreme. Crystal, which was the first girl, she's not obsessed, but she was the victim of obsession. She actually didn't take it serious in the beginning, and that was her downfall. She didn't take it serious in the beginning. She didn't get the orb protection right away. She thought he would just walk away from this anytime, and he didn't.
Interesting. What defines an obsession, I suppose?
What defines it? What defines an obsession is that it's like a tunnel vision, like I said. As far as regarding to love, there's a lot of different obsessions, but regarding to love, you have this tunnel vision of this one person and you're not accepting the rejection. It's like a selfish love. You have for yourself. You're satisfying yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime you don't accept the rejection and you still pursue the person, that's clear cut obsession right there. And that's why I try to tell a lot. That's why I try to show people in my book that if you're pursuing someone that says no, you're no longer in love. You're obsessed.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Has it ever gotten violent, like with any of these people?
Oh, you mean the five people I interviewed?
Yeah.
No.
Or in
no.
the book, even.
Well, the book is a different matter. The book, of yeah, there's a little bit of violence. Not a lot. There's a little bit of violence in the book. The typical obsessed person that's stalking the person, his attitude is, if I can't have you, no one else will. And then at that point, it gets fatal. And sometimes they feel guilty what they did, and then they turn on themselves and they kill themselves as well.
Oh, Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah. And that's a typical thing. Even with the five people, they had the attitude of, if I can't have you, no one else will. But none of the five I interviewed, they never went to the extreme of killing anybody. Mm. Yeah.
Well, did they ever, like, you know, I don't know, like hit or like actually make contact or things
yeah.
like that?
Yeah. The three out of the five would hide at a distance, but every now and then they would peek and they got caught. The other two would just be plain as day, right at a distance, but plain as you could see them in the full view. And the reason those two were plain view and not hiding was because they're trying to show how serious they were about pursuing them. I asked them about that. And I was like, normally the stalker is hiding at a distance. Like my ex-girlfriend, she hid. But she popped up one
peeping
time.
Well, it could be a peeping Tom situation, but it could also just be, you know, just not wanting to be seen, just wanting to see you.
Yeah, it's their way of being close to you without you wanting to be close to them.
Oh,
They're getting the satisfaction of being close by, even at a distance, but they get tired of that eventually. And then the harassment starts, and that's when you get your protection ready.
yeah. So it's, I mean, you said this before, but a selfish love, that's, it's just, it's a self-satisfying emotional need to be close to another person.
Absolutely.
That's wild.
Absolutely. And that's why I try to tell, I tell people in my book that love can very easily turn into obsession. We always hear about other people getting into that thing. We always think it's not going to happen to us. And sometimes it does. I mean, depending on how much you're into that person, or you're thinking that it's going to be forever. And you always hope that it's forever, you know, when you're in a relationship. But sometimes things don't work out.
How do you identify if you're being obsessive about somebody?
How you identify?
Yeah. Like what are the signs, you know?
Like, let's say you're breaking up with someone, and it's the very beginning, and you're telling them, you're talking to them. I would suggest the person, if you're breaking up with someone, be very gentle, because you don't know if the person's, how the person's going to react. How you know the person's going to be obsessed is that they're denying the fact that you want to break up with them. And they would say, "Are you sure you want to do that? I can't really believe that you really think about doing that. Is there anything I could do to maybe change your mind?" And they keep going that gauntlet of trying to escape the realm of the reality of the breakup.
Interesting. And for someone that might be a victim of someone who is obsessing about them, what are some tips that you might give to that person?
The victims, take it serious. The very first thing you do is take it serious, especially when they're threatening your life. And even though you joked around a lot when you're in a relationship and you break up, now you're at the breakup stage and they're saying something like in a threatening manner. Never take that as a joke or think that they're going to get over it. Always take it serious and get that order of protection. Save the voicemail, save the text, bring it to the police, show them the proof, the evidence, and that makes your order of protection even easier to get.
Definitely.
But never take it lightly.
No, certainly not. Okay. This is really, really interesting to me. But now I think it is time for you to tell. You already kind of alluded to it a bit, but I would like to hear the full story of your experience with obsession.
Well, I like I said, I dated her for several months. We had a pretty good start in the relationship. But I've seen signs here and there that I know everybody's personalities are different. I'm not saying everybody's the same, but she was kind of extreme with the way she was acting, and it's kind of peculiar with the way she was being with that. And I was thinking she's either a big drinker or a druggie. So I was kind of waiting and just kind of seeing, you know, observing more of her and whatever. And that's another thing. You're dating someone from the very beginning, always observe their behavior, you know, because
Yeah.
you never know really who you're dating in the beginning. We were good. We were going out, you know, we were, she had a son from another marriage. He was good with me. He was okay. But she was very aggressive. And I'm thinking maybe it's just her personality, you know.
In what way was she aggressive?
Well, she was very aggressive to the point where she would be argumentative. She would literally say something just to start an argument. And maybe some people would just like that, maybe. I don't know. And I was like, well, what was the point of talking about that? I mean, you know. And then she'll bring up an argument that happened maybe a month or two ago, or a debate we had. We would go out, and then she would purposely try to start an argument or get into, not really a fight, but get into like an argument with another person, like on the train, if we're on the subway or whatever.
Oh, aggressive with other
Yeah, I'm like,
people.
yeah. She was just
Strangers.
very anti-people. I know that. And I'm trying to figure it out, like, how do you deal with people like that? But I was trying to deal with her. She's just totally opposite from me. You know, we're very opposite, but sometimes opposites attract. So I didn't think much of that or whatever. And then one night I saw powder rings around her nose.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And I'm not a drug
Sugar,
person.
sugar.
Yeah. I don't think it's a sugar high, if you know what I mean. You don't have to be a drug person to know what that is, you
Yeah.
know? So I confronted her about it and I said, "Look, I'm not an idiot. I'm not, you know, I'm not oblivious to what the whole thing is on the street or whatever." And she says, well, she finally confessed that that's what it was heroin. And I told
Norton
Lux,
heroin, damn.
Yeah. And I told, look, I will pay for rehab. If you go to rehab for as long as you have to go, I'll get 2-3 jobs. I'll pay for it. She laughed at me, literally laughed at me. And I said, what are you laughing for? She says, well, because you don't have to do that. I'm not going to go. I said, why wouldn't you want to go? That'd be something for you. That's an opportunity. Now I'm paying for it. She says, no. She just didn't want to go. She didn't want to change her life or whatever. So I told her, we have to break up. I can't deal with this. No. I can't see people that are doing drugs. So she acted like she understood. But then she said, well, you know what I'm going to do if you don't change your mind? I'm going to bruise my leg, keep hitting my leg till it bruises up. I'm going to call the cops and say, you did it. I'm like, come on. You're going to ruin my life. I never hit a woman in my life. I got 4 sisters I never even put my hands on. And you want to call the cops on me on something I didn't even do? So we went back and forth for 3 hours. It was a 3-hour back and forth. She finally decided not to do that. And she walked out of my apartment. I was exhausted after that argument. I'm so exhausted. And the next day she apologizes. She calls me up and she apologizes. And, you know, how can I make it up to you? Whatever. I said, you can't make it up to me because I ain't going to be with someone who's going to do drugs. That's a no-go for me, you know? So she decided her drugs are more important, and we broke up. And then the stalking happened like a few days later.
How did you find out she was stalking you?
Well, the first time she followed me to my job, and she was right in the lobby area where I worked. I worked at the lobby desk, and she wouldn't get out of the building, so I had to call the cops. And every time my security coworkers would try to take her out, she would push back on them, you know? So the cops took her out, and when I showed the order of protection that I had on her, because she threatened me on my voicemail, on my answering machine, they took her to jail. She violated it 1 week. She was in jail for a whole week. And then she violated it again a few weeks later, because I got a second order of protection against her. So she finally got the hint. She didn't stalk me no more after that. And then the day I moved, she was in front of my building. That's the only time she came by me when I moved.
My God.
It was a nightmare. I had constantly looked behind me all the time. And because I went through all that, I actually didn't date for 2 years. Actually, I was doing the research. I didn't date for 2 years after that.
That's wild.
Yeah, it just totally freaked me out.
It kind of reminds me of a time when I was in an abusive relationship for a while. And I think there was just a time where I was at work and he was like threatening to like come in and like cause a scene.
Oh no.
And it was just one of those things where like, I don't know what to do in this situation. There's no rule book for this.
No.
You know? And you're also like, oh my God, you're affecting my job. You know, like my coworkers are here and like, they have to see this. Luckily he didn't come in, but you know, it's that thinking where you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know, like, if this person comes in and, like, are they going to embarrass me? Are they going to, like, shame me? Are they going to, like, just say a bunch of shit and be a complete dick in front of people that I see on a daily basis? You know, am I going to lose my job because of this?
You with him?
We were on and off for, like, a year and a half. Yeah, it's so wild. It's just kind
you're of not with him. You're not with him now, right?
Oh, hell no. No.
I was going to say those lawn bells are ringing, man.
Oh, no. No, this is a long time ago. This was 2010, maybe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this is a long time ago. But yeah.
Right.
I never, you know, we broke up and I never saw him again, luckily.
Good.
But yeah.
No, the order protection works.
Yeah, I mean, I thought I had to do that. Well, the problem was I lived with him.
That's rough.
Yeah, that was the problem. And he was on the lease, and I ended up having to leave. I ended up having to, like, bite the bullet and just be like, you know what? Have the apartment. It's yours.
Right.
Good.
Right.
I can't do this with you anymore. You got to save yourself, yeah. Man.
Absolutely. You got to take care of yourself. Because we all know people like we think we do. That's a fact. We think we know someone after being with them for so long, and we might have known them to a certain point, but people change too. Sometimes people change, not all the time, but sometimes people do.
I think very rarely, and they have to want to change.
Exactly. Or some people just hid themselves all the time, and they're finally showing their true colors, you know?
They reveal themselves.
Exactly.
Crazy. Yeah, you got to trust people where they show you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm actually, this is Twisted Love that's out. I'm writing the sequel at this time, actually.
What's part two going to be like?
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to give the whole story away on the first story, but one of the people in the triangle will be in the sequel.
Okay. So if the word is obsession for the first book, what's the word for the second book?
Well, it's still dealing with obsession.
Oh, it's still obsession.
It actually starts a new triangle.
Obsession part two.
Yeah. It's Twisted Love 2, the return of Maria DeBlanco. Maria DeBlanco's the second girl that's stalking the guy. And she goes through what she goes through. And I'm not going to give it away, but it's going to be...
Don't give it away. Just stay tuned for it.
Yeah, it's going to be just as good as the first one. I'm promising that. And I got a number of other manuscripts that I'm going to put out first before I put this one out. So I'm going to put some time in working on this one and make it really, really good. But the first one could be bought on BarnesandNoble.com and Amazon.com.
Amazing. Yeah, well, cool. Thank you for being here, Robert. Before I let you go, do you want to play a quick game with me?
Sure.
All right. So this is a game I like to call Red Flags. Basically, I'm going to give you a situation with a relationship. And all you have to do is tell me if it's a red flag for you or not. Okay?
Okay.
Number one, they're constantly on their phone.
Actually, it could be yes, no, as far as a red flag. Some people just phone people, and they're talking constantly. If they're on their phone constantly, sometimes you're wondering who they're talking to. Mm-hmm. But some people are just talkative. Yeah. I wouldn't really worry too much about it.
Maybe a yellow flag or a beige flag, perhaps.
Yeah, I'd say yellow flag. I wouldn't say big deal, really, because you got a lot of people like to talk a lot on the phone. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean they're doing something that they shouldn't be doing either. But you never know. You never really know.
Sure, yeah. Number two, they don't read.
They don't read. What do you mean they don't read?
They don't read anything. They don't read books. They don't read magazines. They just don't like reading. I mean, they read a stop sign, maybe. Hopefully.
I would say maybe ask the person why they don't read. As far as a red flag, I don't see that being a red flag.
Okay, fair enough.
Some people don't like reading.
That's true. They will only have sex in the clothing.
That's weird. That's a red flag.
They have just like a leotard that just goes from like floor to like neck or something. It's just like the cutouts.
And they gotta be in that to have sex.
They gotta be in that to have sex.
That's a red flag.
Hold on, gotta put the sex suit on.
Yeah, really.
Number four, they're on keto or some other fad diet.
A lot of people are on diets. I mean, to me, it's not really a red flag, but if they're visually looking good where they don't really need to be on a diet, even though it's your opinion that you feel that way, you probably would talk to them a good time. Not any time really, but pick a good time to talk to them and ask them why are they on a diet.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And then last one, they're so vain that they probably think that song is about them.
Being vain. I've had a couple women like that. It's kind of annoying in a way because it's like, you know, I don't know. I can't even describe it. There's one girl I was seeing one time. We were together about a year. She actually would be in front of the mirror all the time. And I'm like, why? You look good. Don't worry. But she was like, oh my God. She had to be like constantly in front of the mirror with a brush. You know, that I wouldn't say it's a red flag, maybe a yellow flag.
That's fair. I mean, I feel like if you're spending more time in front of a mirror than with me, then we might have a problem. But, you know.
Actually, Carly Simon wrote that song for John Taylor.
Is that real? Because she still has not officially said who it is.
Well, she gave hints when she had the interview on MTV one day.
Mm-hmm.
And they're asking her, who was that song about? We know Mick Jagger was in the background singing You're So Vain with her. Mm-hmm. But she was giving hints. It was Taylor, John Taylor. But I'm sure because she had a relationship with him for a long time.
Who's John Taylor?
Not John Taylor. What was his first? I can't remember his first name. He was involved with her for a long time. Something Taylor. Or
James Taylor?
James Taylor. That's his name. Yeah. Because okay. When you think about it, she was in a long relationship with him. But she had a relationship also with Cat Stevens.
Well, maybe we solved the riddle then. Oh, he was hot too. Oh my God.
Yeah, he was very big at the time. Very big with the women and with his reputation being an entertainer and songwriter.
Oh, he was huge. Hot. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Okay, wonderful. Well, we solved the riddle and we found out who Carly Simon was singing about. So this is
right.
Robert, where can my listeners find you?
I have a website. If you go on Blue Eyed Squirrel, BLUEEYED Squirrel Entertainment, BlueEyedSquirrelEntertainment.com, they'll have my book there, my little bio about myself. And I could be bought also on BarnesandNobles.com and Amazon.com as well.
Amazing.
And if you go on YouTube, you could find my commercials. Just put in Twisted Love, Robert Bigouet, BIGAOUETTE. And you see the two commercials my publisher put out for the book.
Amazing. Robert, thank you so much for being here.
I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you to my guest for joining me in this week's episode. Be sure to check the episode description for all of their information. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to leave a comment and a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify to help out the show. Send me your horrible hookups, your dating disasters, and your spicy questions to hookuphorrorstoriespodcast@gmail.com. Subscribe to my YouTube channel for video versions of this show and a ton of other cool content. My blogs, The Deviant Diaries and A Deviant's Guide to Sex, can be found on my website at demetriawild.com. Support my work and get early access to my videos, podcast episodes, and exclusive content, check out my Patreon, patreon.com/demetriawild. Also, follow me on Instagram. I am @demetriawild_. Oh yeah, and one last thing. Thank you for listening, and stay deviant.
Remember, subscribing might not be worth it, but it's also not optional. So just do it.